You ever had a struggle with laziness in an area of your life? Anywhere? Perhaps you're perfect. You've never sloughed off in anything. Well, most of us have certain areas of our lives where we have a tendency toward laziness. Some may have several areas where that's a struggle. We want to look together this morning at something that is a cure for laziness. Love God with all you've got. In Mark chapter 12, verses 28 through 30, one of the scribes comes to Jesus and asks him a question. Which is the greatest commandment, the first commandment? He said, you know, is there one commandment that's more important than all the rest? Now, a lot of us would have said, oh, no. All the commandments, you've got it. All of them are important. Well, they are all important. But is there one that overrides everything else? And Jesus said, yes. Jesus said, the first of all the commandments. Guess which one of the Ten Commandments it was? None of them. It wasn't one of the Ten Commandments. What? You mean the greatest commandment wasn't one of the Ten Commandments? That's right. It's the one on which all of the Ten Commandments hung. This one commandment, so great. Here's what he says. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord, and you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your mind, and with all your strength. This is the first commandment. That's the greatest one. Love God with everything you've got. Heart, soul, mind, and strength. And you say, well, what on earth does that have to do with laziness? That doesn't have anything to do with being lazy. Oh, but it does. You see, because if we love God in each of those areas, we're going to find that we'll rid ourselves of the laziness in those four areas of our lives. And those four areas encompass everything about our lives. You see, laziness, or slothfulness it's sometimes called, is a sin, but it's not just that it's a sin, it can lead us to other sins. Because someone is lazy, it may lead them to covetousness, to theft, to lying, even to murder, because of their laziness. It can lead to other sins as well. So we want to get rid of it. We want to cleanse this rottenness out of our bones and from all of these areas of our lives. So let's look at those four things then. We'll start with the heart. Jesus mentioned it first. With all thy heart. Well, the heart is full of feelings. Now, obviously, we understand that our hearts pump our blood and that they don't really have anything to do with our emotions, scientifically speaking. But still, the heart is the part of our body that we talk about when we talk about things like love, things like, I love you with all my heart. We don't ever hear somebody say, you know, I love you with all of my brains. No, it's always the heart. The heart, you know, the heart is the center of our emotions from a philosophical kind of standpoint. That's the way we view it. I've got all these feelings in my heart that I just don't know what to do with. Well, there again, we talk about the heart. And so Jesus uses that heart as that emotional part of our being. And our emotional bonds that we have with others, our relationships, many times are built on our feelings, our heart, our emotions. So as we think about our relationships, and we let this heart stand for our relationships with others, the emotional attachments that we have to other people. And you know, laziness affects those relationships, doesn't it? It affects relationships between parents and children. Ephesians 6, 1 through 4, the Bible tells fathers how to treat their children, to bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Do you think that just happens naturally? Well, that's something that has to be worked at. That takes some labor. You can't be lazy and be a good parent. It takes hard work to be a parent. Children might say it takes harder work to be a good child. You know, it's hard to deal with parents. I heard somebody snicker out there. It couldn't have been my son. I know it had been somebody else. Oh, but you know, it is that relationship deteriorates, and not just that one. Others. We look at David and Absalom. Perfect example of this. David had this son Absalom, and Absalom was a beautiful young man. I guess we should say handsome, maybe. But he was a fine specimen of manhood. But there was a problem. His sister was mistreated and abused. And David, their father, didn't take care of that problem. He didn't punish the one who did it. And so Absalom began to have some bitterness in his heart toward his father. Oh, now he certainly was angry at the one who had harmed his sister, and he killed that man. That was one of his half-brothers. But he was bitter and angry toward his father too, and that built up over time to the point that Absalom had to run away because of what he had done in killing his half-brother. But if David had been the father that dealt with that first issue, Absalom wouldn't have done the other. And so David's laziness kind of contributed as a parent to the relationship breakdown there. And then his other son, he's lost one to death and the other is far off. And old Joab, he's a wily guy. He sends a woman in to talk to David, and she convinces David to basically bring his son back. And so he says, okay, let him come back. But then he wouldn't even go see him. He wouldn't talk to him. He let him come back, but he didn't rebuild the relationship. He still was being lazy about it. And so Absalom did some things to try to get everybody's attention and so forth, but you know, obviously the way Absalom behaved is reprehensible, but a lot of it stemmed from David being a lazy father. And it eventually led to the point that Absalom tried to take the kingdom away from his father. And succeeded for a short period of time in doing that. And David and all of those following him had to flee the city. They had to run away and hide until they could build their strength up to come back. But that relationship deteriorated and deteriorated, and they didn't do the hard work that's necessary to keep a relationship strong. And so it fell apart. And it became an adversarial relationship instead of the kind of friendship and relationship that a father and son could have and should have if both parties work at it. Well, of course, the relationship between spouses, husband and wife. Ephesians 5, 22 through 25 talks about the wives' role in that. A little later, it talks about the husband's role in that as well. And basically, Paul says, you know, both of you have some work to do here. It can't be all one-sided. But laziness in that relationship leads to a lot of the divorces that we have. A lot of the times, they just didn't work at it. We think about the importance of kindness and compliments. My wife just the other day, she said to me, I'm upset at you. I said, what for? I hadn't done anything that I knew of, but it wasn't what I had done, it's what I hadn't done. She said, well, I had worked hard while you were at work, and I had cleaned the kitchen and the dining room all up, and you didn't even say a word about it when you came in the door. Now, my response was, well, you know, when we do what we're supposed to do, should we expect somebody to brag on us about it? Well, that didn't go over very well either, you can imagine. But it is true. We love for people to recognize when we do something. We love for people to compliment us when it's deserved. And so I thought, well, I'm sorry. It does look nice. You did a good job cleaning it up. And you know what? She did the same thing yesterday. She wasn't even feeling good yesterday, and she washed dishes and cleaned up. And then I went home, and I didn't say anything about it. I'll have to apologize for that when I get home today, you know. So I get a bad habit of just not giving the compliment. But that's just kind of laziness, isn't it? We have to work at these relationships. And a lot of times it's not just something that happens naturally. Marriages take work just like car maintenance or home maintenance. The home needs maintenance just like the house needs maintenance. And whether it's the parents and children or the spouses, that needs to be worked at. And it's hard to be a good husband or wife and be lazy in that relationship. In fact, it's impossible. Well, a relationship between friends and even extended family. Of course, some of our extended family we've never even met, probably, so we don't have much of a relationship. But our friends especially, Proverbs 17:17, a friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. That takes some work, doesn't it, to love at all times, to be there when there's adversity, to help somebody when they need it. That takes work. It's hard to do that if you're lazy. A man that has friends must show himself friendly, Proverbs 18:24 says. I'm not a scientist by any stretch. I did enjoy science when I was in high school, but I think I took one science class in college, because I had to. But in high school, I kind of enjoyed science, chemistry and physics and all these things. But in physics, I learned about this law called the second law of thermodynamics. And basically, what it says is that, to put it in layman's terms, I guess you'd say, things run down. In terms of a car, if you don't put gas in the car, it's going to run out of gas. If you don't change the oil, it's going to burn up the engine, that kind of thing. If you don't put water in it, it's going to overheat. All of those kind of things. That things just tend to become disorganized and chaotic and run down and wear out. Well, we know that. It doesn't take us a minute to look around at our own bodies in the mirror and realize they're wearing out. Well, some of these young folks may not have realized that yet. But the rest of us, we start to see, we're wearing out. We're running down. We can't do what we used to be able to do. That's part of that. Well, that same law, that applies to relationships too. If we don't work on our relationships, they're going to run down. And we've got to watch out for that. We've got to work at it. There was an infidel who died, and in his will, he left his farm to the devil. And so the courts tried to figure out, what do we do with that? How could that happen? You can't will something to the devil. They said, what do we do about it? And they finally decided to just let it alone, just let it go. And so it grew up with weeds and briars all over the farm. The house and barn were unpainted and they rotted down. The soil eroded and washed away. All the good topsoil that could have been used for growing crops got washed away. In fact, the court determined that the best way to let Satan have it is to do nothing. Same thing's true of our relationships. If we do nothing, Satan will have them. Satan will destroy them because that's what he does. And so we've got to work on our relationships. The relationships between Christians also. Philippians 2:3-4 says, let nothing be done through strife or vainglory, but in lowliness of mind let each esteem other better than themselves. Look not every man on his own things, but every man also on the things of others. This again, it's one of those things that takes some work. We have to do it. Matthew 25:40, in the judgment scene that Christ paints there, he says, the king shall answer to them and say, verily I say unto you, inasmuch as you've done it unto one of the least of these my brethren, you've done it to me. We've got to work on our relationships. We can't be lazy with relationships. And it will not work. And even our relationships with others outside the church, just strangers, how do we treat them? Galatians 6:10 says, as we have therefore opportunity, let us do good unto all men, especially unto them of the household of faith. But to everyone, we need to do good when we can. Poem says, I knelt to pray when day was done and prayed, Lord bless everyone. Lift from each heart the pain and let the sick be well again. And then I woke again one day and carelessly went on my way. The whole day long I did not try to wipe a tear from any eye. I did not try to share the load of any brother on the road. I did not even go to see the sick man just next door to me. Yet once again when day was done I prayed, Lord bless everyone. But as I prayed, to my ear came a voice that whispered, dear, pause, hypocrite, before you pray. Whom have you tried to bless today? God's sweetest blessings always go by hands that serve him here below. And then I hid my face and cried, "Forgive me, Lord, for I have lied. But let me live another day, and I will live the way I pray." You know, sometimes we're guilty of being lazy in our good deeds. We're guilty of being lazy in our relationships with others. We don't build those relationships. Sometimes worse than being lazy, people are actively destroying relationships, and that's certainly not good. But sometimes we're just apathetic. We're just kind of lazy about it. We just think, well, I love them and they love me and it'll just always be. But relationships don't run on nothing. They have to be worked on. They have to have some fuel in the tank to keep going. But secondly, of course, there is the soul that Jesus mentioned. The soul is forevermore. That soul, representative, of course, of our eternal nature, our spiritual being. And that indicates our relationship to God, our spiritual side, and the part of us that's going to last forever. It tells us our love for God is eternal. We don't just love Him now while we're in this life. We're going to love Him forever because the soul, our souls are to love Him with all of our soul. And of course, they can't be divided. But sometimes we find that we're guilty of being lazy in our souls. Just as we don't work on our relationships sometimes, sometimes we don't work on this spiritual relationship with God. We don't work on our spiritual growth like we should. Prayer is one area where we need to grow and work and not be lazy. Matthew 6:5-7, Jesus talks about our prayer and how it should be that we go in and to the closet and pray to the Father in secret. And He talks about not using vain repetitions like the heathen do. We're not going to be heard because of how many words we use. We're not going to be heard because of how big of words we use. We're not going to be heard because of how fancy of words we use. We're going to be heard because those words come from a sincere soul seeking God. 1 Thessalonians 5:17 tells us to pray without ceasing. You know, read this about a couple of things that seem to have passed by the wayside. I wish they were still around. They sound really great. And so it says, "I'm aghast at the Harwell thinkometer, which by a system of buttons placed before each member of a group permits group decisions without the embarrassment of discussion. You press a button, yes, no, or maybe, and the machine calculates the total reaction. People don't have to discuss it. They don't have to wonder about it. He says, "I'm aghast at the I can't even pronounce this one. That's probably why it didn't make it. The dynamucator. It allegedly lets you learn while you sleep." Well, I can't imagine why that didn't take off. I mean, but it says, "Without any intellectual effort, you can learn to be an aggressive salesman, or you can learn to speak Russian. You know, just put that on while you sleep." You know, I tried that one time when I was in college. I slept with the textbook under my head, and it really didn't work. It's really hard to learn by osmosis. It doesn't help. But he says, "I am more terrified by the dial of prayer movement, by which a machine performs your devotions for you, and you do not have to make any personal exertion to get in touch with deity beyond giving Him a ring." But isn't that sometimes we want somebody else to do the praying for us? We're kind of lazy about it sometimes. But you see, when it comes to our relationship with God, somebody else can't do that for us. When it comes to our soul, somebody else can't do that for us. It's my soul. It's your soul. Nobody else can grow our souls for us. We have to grow. The area of study and doctrine. 2 Timothy 2:15 says, "Study to show yourself approved unto God, a workman that needs not be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth." 1 Timothy 1:3-4 Paul charged them that they may teach no other, or told Paul, told Timothy rather to charge them that they teach no other doctrine and not give heed to fables and endless genealogies which minister questions rather than godly edifying which is in faith. You know, it's easy to be lazy and just talk about the weather. Not that it's a sin to talk about the weather, but that's just the, isn't that when total strangers get together, what do they talk about? Why? I ran into somebody the other day, just bumped into them, and they said, "Wow, what about this weather?" You know, well, I mean, 3 snowstorms in 2 weeks. That's a news event down here anyway. But you know, that was the thing to talk about because it was so shallow, though. It was so easy. It was lazy to talk about that. But spiritual things require much more effort. People don't want you to talk to them about their spiritual life. They don't want you to talk to them about their soul and what they might need to do to be saved. They don't want to talk about those things. Because that's hard work to study and learn what you need to do to please God. What about in our singing? We're commanded to sing Ephesians 5:19-20. 1 Corinthians 14:15 says, "I will sing with the spirit and I will sing with the understanding also." We've been putting those words in the bulletin so we can understand a little better what we're singing, hopefully, those little quizzes. But boy, you know, I've learned a lot just looking, you know, reading through, putting those things together, looking up the definition. Some of those words didn't mean what I thought they meant. I thought I knew what they meant, and then get to reading it, oh, that's not what it means. But that takes effort, doesn't it? And for us to sing, that takes effort. You can sing till you're out of breath. I mean, that's hard work. And yet it's what God wants us to do to please Him. Stewardship, certainly. 1 Corinthians 16 talks about the collection of the saints. 2 Corinthians 8:3-7 also talking about giving and being good stewards of our resources. But that takes some planning. That takes some work. You can't do it when you're lazy. The lazy person, the Bible tells us, the lazy person spends all he has. He doesn't have anything left to give to God. In the area of morality, laziness in the area of morality will lead us to all kinds of sinful things. Romans 12:1-2 says, "I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. And be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God." That takes energy. That takes work. He said, don't just be conformed. Don't just follow through laziness the natural pattern of degrading yourself morally. Don't be like the world. We talked about in class this morning, fighting upstream against the current. That's a difficult thing to do. It's not something that laziness will accomplish. And so again, laziness leads us away from loving God the way we should. James 1:27 also talks about pure religion. And it involves working, it involves visiting the fatherless and the widow and keeping yourself unspotted. 1 Timothy 5:22 talks about not being a partaker of other men's sins. Keep yourself pure. See, again, that's something that takes an effort. Keep yourself pure. The indication there is that if you don't work at it, if you don't keep it that way, it's not going to stay that way. It's going to get dirty. I don't understand how my van gets dirty. I don't even drive up and down dirt roads like JL does, but my van, it just gets dirty. I don't know how. I didn't do anything to it to make it dirty. It just seems like that's just the natural thing. You have to work at it to keep it clean, and that's one area where I'm kind of, that's that lazy problem. I don't keep my van washed. I don't keep the inside cleaned out. You ever notice if you don't clean up, if you don't straighten up, big piles of mess get everywhere, don't they? Well, the same thing is true in our spiritual lives. Our lives get spotted and dirty and piled up with junk. Our soul will. So we've got to watch out for that. We've got to watch out for the wear and tear. Jesus said in Matthew 10:38, He that taketh not his cross and followeth after me is not worthy of me. Recorded in 1963, a nuclear submarine called the Thresher disappeared. It sunk. 129 men died on that ship. Poor workmanship and sloppy testing may have led to the loss. The probable cause of the sinking was pinpointed as a failure of the saltwater piping system that cooled the propulsion machinery. Such a failure flooded the submarine and knocked out all electrical power. It sank in 8,000 feet of water. But before that, it had just undergone an extensive overhaul at the Navy shipyard in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. Only 5% of the saltwater piping system was inspected. 95% of it, they didn't even check it out. That sounded like laziness on the mechanics' part. It's supposed to have been undergoing this extensive overhaul, and you checked 5%. But what's even more astounding is, even in that small sampling, 1 out of 7 of the pipes and fittings that they did check were below standard. They should have been changed. They should have been repaired. And finding that much in just 5% should have let them know that the other 95% probably needed work too. But they didn't. They just let it go. You know, when we see sin in our life, or when we see problems in our life spiritually, that should let us know that there's some things that need some work, and we need to work on them. The third thing we want to notice is the mind. The mind is for reasoning. It's interesting. I hear all the time preachers say, well, the heart in the Bible is your mind. Well, then why did Jesus say heart and then turn around and say, and mind? The heart is indicative of the emotional part of us. The mind is indicative of the intellectual part of us. The brain. Our mind. Our intellect. That controls what we think, know, and believe. It's also the way we determine why we should or shouldn't think or do something. Why shouldn't I do that? Well, because I remember the last time I touched that, it burned my finger and I got a blister and it hurt. So I'm not going to touch that again. The mind does that. Now, unfortunately, in our society today, a lot of people run on emotions and they forget their mind, but be that as it may, we want to consider this. Some problems that laziness brings when it comes to the mind. Believing what you're told without evidence. Being naive or gullible, as the case may be. Acts 17 verse 11 says, those in Berea were more noble than those in Thessalonica. They received the word with all readiness of mind, but they didn't just take it for granted. They searched the Scriptures to see whether those things were so. They compared it with what they already knew to see if it was right. Stories told of one man, he was asked about his faith, and they said, what do you believe? He said, I believe what the church believes. So, well, what does the church believe? Well, the church believes what I believe. Okay, well, please tell me, what is it that both you and the church believe? I said, well, don't you understand? The church and I believe the same thing. So I didn't know what he believed. He didn't know what his church believed. He just knew that whatever the church believed, he was going to believe it. That's a very dangerous place to be, isn't it? How would he know if his church could suddenly decide they were going to worship Satan instead of God? He'd just keep believing what the church believed. He wouldn't know the difference. So we need to not be lazy when it comes to our intellect, our mind. We don't need to believe others without any investigation. Matthew 15, 13, and 14, Jesus warns about the blind leaders of the blind. Don't just blindly follow people. Following people blindly, without investigating and without speaking up and doing what needs to be done, is one of the things that led to the Challenger space shuttle disaster back in 1986. I remember that when I was just a kid, but I remember that. Those astronauts boarded that spaceship, the shuttle, thinking that they were going to go into space. They trusted that the people that were supposed to do things that they didn't know how to do. I mean, you have to trust some people sometimes, don't you? But the sad thing was not them trusting. The problem was that the engineers and designers said, it's too cold, it won't hold, it won't work, we can't blast it off. The problem was they didn't have the influence. The people who had the influence, the political power, the executives and planners said, yeah, it'll be fine. But they didn't know what they were talking about. And so everybody went along with the, oh yeah, it'll be fine, instead of listening to the ones who said, no, it's freezing, it's too cold, and there's going to be a problem. You see, we've got to investigate many times to see who's right and who's wrong, because there are many areas of life where there are opposing viewpoints, and we've got to investigate to see what's right and what's wrong. Laziness brings a lack of desire to seek the truth. Matthew 6:33 says, seek first the kingdom of God and His righteousness. But so many times laziness keeps us from wanting to really seek. We want it to just be brought to us. We want it to just be handed to us. I was eating with some men, and there was some fried fish and on the buffet, and I went and got some, and it was pretty good. And I said, yeah, you know, I like it like this. I like it even better when they bring it to me on the plate. I said, you know, I just really don't like going out fishing and catching it and having to gut it and skin it and fillet it and fry it up. I said, I don't like all that, but you know, it's pretty good when somebody else does all the work for you. So many times that's what we try to do intellectually. We want somebody else to do all the work for us. The problem is it's our mind. We have to answer for ourselves. John 18:37 through 38, Jesus talks about the truth. He said, I came to witness to the truth, and everyone that is of the truth will hear His voice. An unwillingness to study goes right along with that. Matthew 5:6 says, blessed are they which hunger and thirst after righteousness, they shall be filled. One student figured a way around having to study. The Kansas City Star, there was an ad in the personal column. It had eight words. Reprehensible, idiosyncrasy, extrapolate, platitudinous, assiduous, plethora, euthanasia, desiderata. And it was signed Ronnie Johnson. The editor wondered, why would anybody put that in the newspaper? Pay to put that in the newspaper. And so they sent a reporter out to find Ronnie Johnson, and when they found him, he turned out to be a high school sophomore whose English teacher had told the students that if they could find those eight words in the newspaper, she'd give them an automatic A. He figured out how to do it, didn't he? But he was lazy about it, wasn't he? He didn't actually want to do the study that it took. And you know, some people want to do that with the Bible. They want to have all the answers handed to them in little short snippets instead of studying the Bible and learning it and what it says. Well, finally, Jesus mentions strength. Strength is forcefulness. It's our physical nature. It makes us distinct from every other human being. Some are stronger. Some are weaker. Some have more stamina but less power. Some have less power, more power but less stamina. I mean, we're all different. And yet, interestingly, do you notice that God never asks me to love Him with your strength? And He doesn't ask you to love Him with my strength. Because we're each different. He asks each of us to love Him with all of our own strength. He never asks us to do something we can't do. Isn't that amazing? We need to do it with our jobs. Proverbs 20 and verse 4 talks about the sluggard. He won't even plow. Proverbs 21 and 25 talks about the slothful. His desire kills him because his hands won't labor. There's the old saying, nowadays God helps those who help themselves and the government helps those who won't. That's kind of sad. That's not the way it's supposed to be. What about in the area of our time? Ephesians 5, 14 through 16 tells us to redeem the time. Are we clock watchers? I hope not this morning because I'm a little over time. But the story is told Thomas Edison noticed his employees watched the clock all the time. So what he did was he put clocks all over the place that all kept different time. They became so confused they just quit looking at the clock. It wasn't doing any good because they didn't know what time it was. And so then they weren't so eager to want to go and get out of there so quick. What about our willingness to do work for the church? Do we have a mind to work? Hebrews 6:12 says, "Be not slothful, but followers of them who through faith and patience inherit the promises." Judges 18:9 in the Old Testament, as they were going into the land and so forth and fighting the land, trying to take over the land and all, they said, "We have seen the land, and behold, it is very good. And are ye still? Be not slothful to go and to enter to possess the land." Somehow I have a feeling that should say Joshua, but maybe Judges is right. I may have a typo there. But are we guilty of making excuses? When we do, we put ourselves in with some sports heroes. You ever notice they always making excuses for why it went wrong with them? Since the Super Bowl, I've heard an awful lot of excuses for Peyton Manning's inability to do all his magic that he usually does when he was playing Seattle. But there was one field goal kicker that always, "Oh, it was a bad snap. The fellow holding the ball messed up." One time he actually took the blame for himself. He said, "I was too busy reading my stats on the scoreboard." Oops. Wasn't paying attention to what he was doing. Another time he said the grass was too tall. Too bad he was playing on artificial turf at the time. Grass is too tall. You know, all sorts of excuses. Do we make excuses? All kinds of excuses. It's so easy to make excuses. But we need to instead do our best, put our full strength behind it. What about our sleep? Proverbs 6:9 says, "How long will thou sleep, O sluggard? When will you rise out of your sleep?" Proverbs 16:14 says, "As the door turns on its hinges, so does the slothful upon his bed." Do we get up and get to work, or do we want to just lay around all the time physically? Working is important. The story is told, the man told his friend, says, "Yeah, my brother-in-law leaps out of bed as soon as the first rays of sun touch his window." Of course, his bedroom window faces west. He probably gets up by 3, maybe 4 o'clock in the afternoon, doesn't he? Oh, well. You know, we've got to realize that when we love God with all we've got, there won't be room for laziness in our life in any area. We're loving Him with all our heart, all our soul, all our mind, and all our strength. We're going to be growing closer to Him, and it's going to become easier then to love Him even more, with even more in all those areas. The more we love, the easier it is to love. We need to be working on that. What area is there in your life where maybe you've been a little lazy? You haven't been giving God everything in that area. Maybe some area where you've really not even been giving Him half. Just been kind of lazy in that area. Need to work on that area. If you need to respond to God's invitation this morning, if you need to become a Christian by believing in Jesus, repenting of your sins, confessing Jesus as the Son of God, and being buried with Him to wash your sins away in the waters of baptism, you can do that today. If you're a Christian, but perhaps you've been half-hearted or maybe half-souled or half-minded or half-strength, I don't know how we term all those, but maybe you just haven't been giving Him your all in one area or another. You need to repent of that. Maybe you need the prayers of the church to help in those areas. If you have a need to respond to His invitation, please come as we stand and as we sing.